Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Arauco's third quarter 2019 results conference call. Today, we have with us Mr. Gianfranco Truffolo, CFO of Arauco. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded, and all participants will be in a listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are completed, there will be a question-and-answer session. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during the call, please press star and zero to reach the operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that this presentation contains forward-looking statements that are based on the beliefs, assumptions, and expectations of the management of the company based on currently available information. They involve risks and uncertainties because they relate to future events or expectations and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Arauco and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. For further discussion of these risks and uncertainties, investors should refer to quarterly and annual Arauco filings with the Chilean CMF and U.S. SEC. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements due to new information or future developments. Now I'll turn the conference call over to Mr. Gianfranco Truffolo, CFO of Arauco. Mr. Gianfranco, you may begin your conference.
Okay, thanks, and welcome everyone to this third quarter results conference call. We will start, as usual, with a financial review. So starting on page four, we can see a summary of the results of the quarter. We can see there that we had a slight increase in revenue of 2.6% to a total revenue for the quarter of $1.4 billion. We had a net loss of $30 million this quarter that compares with the $57 million of net income that we had on the second quarter. And we had a reduction of 30% in our adjusted EBITDA for a total of $238 million for the third quarter. In terms of net debt and leverage, our net debt went down $200 million to $4.25 billion. And we had an increase in our leverage from 2.9 times to 3.3 times, basically explained by a lower last 12 months EBITDA. So if we go to page five, and some details about the movement in revenues. We had a 4.7 increase in pulp business revenues that was driven basically by a 25% increase in volume that was offset by a decrease in average prices of 19%. In the case of wood products, we had a 0.7% increase that was driven in the case of panels of with an increase in volume of 11%, offset also by a slight decrease in average prices. In terms of the distribution of sales of the company, for this quarter, we had a 53% share of wood product sales and a 44% sales coming from the pulp division. The rest is forestry, basically, sales. In the case of cost of sales, we had an increase of $88 million, that is about 9%, that is driven basically by the effect of the variable cost that are affected by the increase in sales volume. That was shown especially in timber cost and maintenance cost and some chemical cost. This was offset by a decrease in the depreciation for right of use, that is IFRS 16. In terms of unitary sale costs, we had a reduction of 0.3% in softwood bleach pulp, an increase of 3.5% in hardwood bleach pulp, and a decrease of 4.7% in unbleached softwood pulp. Now moving to page six, we also have an increase in distribution costs, again, explained by an increase in sales volume. So we had a 12% increase, that is a $17 million increase. The main line that increased was freight cost of $13 million. So So total distribution costs were $160 million. In the case of administrative expenses, we had a decrease of 4%, that is about $6 million. This is explained by lower computer services expenses, so $5.2 million that was paid during the second quarter, and offset by an increase of $3 million in depreciation of right of use. Also, we had some effect of depreciation of our main exchange rates, especially the Chilean peso and Argentine peso during the quarter that affect the local currencies in this account. So total administrative expenses was $140 million. In other income, we had a big decrease of 52%, and that is $45 million, and that is basically explained by a higher than normal other income that we obtained in second quarter because of the sale of the shares of Puertos y Logística that brought us about $40 million in other income. Page 7, now looking at the full net income statement, we can comment on the line of, for example, of other expenses. We can see there that we had an increase from $27 million to $37 million. One of the main explanations here is the deterioration of the line 1 of MAPA, of Arauco, sorry, that will be shut down as soon as we start MAPA. So we are deteriorating that asset every month. So during the quarter, we deteriorated $17 million that was accounted in other expenses. So that is explanation of the increase in that line. In financial cost, we had a decrease, about $4 million. That is explained by the accounting of the buyback of the bonds that we did in the second quarter of 2019. In participation in loss on associates, we had a loss of $6 million compared with a gain of $5 million. This explanation is basically the negative results of Sonae Arauco that accounted for a small loss every month during the quarter. Exchange rate differences is a little bit higher, $12 million loss compared to $9 million, explained by the depreciation of the Chilean peso, Brazilian real, and Argentine peso during the quarter that affects the local currency accounts that we hold. In terms of income taxes, we had a positive 10.3 explained by a negative income before tax of almost $40 million. So at the end of the day, we had a net income of negative $30 million compared with a positive of $57 million accounted in the second quarter. Moving to page 8, we can see the evolution of the EBITDA that is shown in the first graph. That is the $238 million that we obtained. That is a margin of 17%, which is a decrease compared with the 25% that we had in the second quarter. In terms of breakdown by division, the pulp division obtained $148 million, the wood product division 62, forestry 55, and then we had the consolidated adjustments, another of negative 27. The big reduction in the EBITDA comes from the reduction in EBITDA of about $50 million in pulp division and about $22 million in wood products. Also, we had the reduction in the others account because the second quarter we had a positive coming from the sale of the Puloxa shares of about $14 million. The explanation of the decrease in the pulp and wood product division is basically explained by lower average prices, especially in the wood pulp division. Now moving to the review by business segment and outlook in page 10, starting with the pulp business, we can see first an evolution of prices starting from January 18. The decrease in prices have continued, especially during the summer in the Northern Hemisphere, and we can see in the graph the indexes in Europe and in China. And if we look first in the prices in China, we can see that prices stayed more or less stable in long fiber and continued decreasing in short fiber, reaching numbers that currently are about $570 per ton for softwood and about $460, $450 for hardwood. That is a spread of about $115. That is an increase compared with the last call that we had about $90. In terms of prices in Europe, that is list price, we have at about $700 per ton for or hardwood, which is the type of fiber that we sell in Europe. In terms of the global pulp demand, we can see there that we had a global reduction of 1% compared to the period January-August of this year compared to last year, but especially a big reduction in Europe, West Europe with 10%, compensated by a 6% increase in China. In terms of inventories, we can see in the table on the right side that we have a reduction in the days of production. In softwood, we have 36 days, which is quite normal compared with, especially with the number that we had in June, which was 46 days. And in hardwood, we have 52 days, which is an increase compared to the numbers a year ago, which was 41, but as a reduction compared with the 68 days that we had as of June this year. Page 11, we have a graph showing the reduction of 25% in EBITDA coming from the pulp division from the second quarter, and of course a big reduction compared to a year ago where we were experiencing record prices. You can see there the decrease in average price of 19%. Quarter over quarter and 32% year over year. What we saw was an increase in volume sales from 850,000 tons last quarter to 1,064,000 this quarter. That allow us to reduce on about 80,000 tons or total inventories during the quarter, which is now reaching very normal levels of production, about 1 month or 1.1 month of production. Production has been very stable and was 990,000 tons during this quarter. In terms of markets, as I already mentioned, prices continue falling in hardwood, reaching $470 as of September. In softwood, the situation was more stable, reaching $565. And we saw a minor recovery in demand, in part due to seasonality. In terms of the market in Europe, we saw a low consumption and very low economic activities. So this pushed some paper companies to reduce production and shut down some lines. If we move to page 12 and now looking a little bit more into the fourth quarter, we have seen that the situation has started to improve a little bit. The inventories are starting to normalize. In total levels, especially in China, but also there's a movement between the inventories from producers to consumers. With all the bonded warehouses that we are in China are moving a little bit into the ownership of clients. That is positive in terms of cleaning a little bit the inventories that producers are holding in China. We have seen and we are seeing paper producers in China with high margins enjoying a low price of pulp. Historically, this fourth quarter is very active, so we hope that demand will continue to go as we have seen it. But the Chinese New Year this year is starting earlier at the end of 2020, so shipments, especially the ones that come from Latin America, will be reduced probably starting the second part of December, because they won't be able to reach before the New Year's, the Chinese New Year. So that's why we're expecting lower demand or shipments at the end of the quarter. In terms of prices increases, we saw a slight increase in the price of softwood. We were able to increase in October $10 from $565 to $575. And we expect the prices to continue to be stable, at least during this fourth quarter, with some probability of a better environment at the beginning of next year. That is Asia. In Europe, we're still seeing low internal consumption, especially in printing and writing. Some better margins in paper producers, especially in tissue, and some of the European producers with some problems competing in export sales outside the economic union with some Chinese and Indonesian exporters. In terms of annual stoppages production, This the third quarter, we only had a portion of the stoppage of the Valdivia mill that, as you know, is was doing a long annual stoppage in order to implement the changes for the dissolving pulp project. So the Valdivia mill stoppage just ended yesterday, so we're ramping up production currently. And in the fourth quarter, the only one that was also to be done was the Montes del Plata for 10 days that was also completed recently. So still, we don't have any more stoppages in this quarter. And in the first quarter of 2020, we will have Arauco Line 2 for 13 days, Constitución Mill for 7 days, and the small Licancel Mill for 10 days. Now moving to wood product business. Page 13, we saw a reduction of 27% in the EBITDA from 85 to 62. And that is explained by a reduction in EBITDA from both businesses, but because of price decreases in panels of 4% and in wood, solid wood with 1%. And that it was compensated by a increase in volume of 11% in case of panels. So we saw, in terms of markets during the third quarter, a Latin American market that was basically stable, especially what we in Chile, Peru, Colombia, but with exception of Brazil and Argentina, where we saw a more difficult market. Brazil didn't show any significant improvement, basically because of some oversupply and some weak economy, particularly in MDF. In Argentina, show some signs of improvement, but still is affected by the exchange rate. So in terms of dollar margins, it's still showing weaknesses. North America sales increased because basically the O'Grady mill that is in the middle of the ramp up. Currently, we are about 65% capacity in terms of production. We just ended the first stoppage that we did in order to make some improvements in the drying process. And now we are very happy with the production that we're getting. We are very close to break even in terms of operational profit. And we are producing a very good quality of product, currently the best quality in the North American market for particle board. In terms of some timber, it's still affected by the ongoing trade war and some oversupply, particularly in Asia and Oceania. In plywood sales, we had an increase of 15% in sales, with the U.S. demand remaining positive. And also some competition from Brazil, other producers in Chile and China, with some price decreases. Page 14. Looking at the production and sales volume, we can see there the increase in 11% of panel sales from 1.45 million to 1.6 million cubic meters of sales. Some timber had a slight reduction from 591 to 561, and plywood, the increase that we already mentioned, to 134,000 cubic meters. Still a little bit below production. We're increasing a little bit of inventory ahead of the summer season here in Chile, where we expect to have lower production and compensate by a decrease in inventory. Page 15, the outlook of the wood product business. We are seeing a strong market in the North America. North America represents 57% of our sales, and especially in the U.S., we are seeing a strong market in particle board. Despite being affected by seasonality, we are experiencing good demand and good pricing, so supply and demand should be remain balanced. In MDF, the market situation varies by region, and some of them are affected by oversupply, and we expect that to continue during this current quarter. In terms of our sales in Mexico, we are having good results, experiencing good improvements in the production of the assets that we bought from Maciza. And also, some of our competitors are in a very weak financial position, so that is helping us in our sales. In terms of remanufactured wood products, we expect that seasonality will affect our sales until the first month of 2020. That is normal every year. And we expect the market to be positive. And the molding market especially is affected a little bit about oversupply from Brazil. In terms of plywood, sales continue to go up, but we don't expect any significant price increases during the rest of 2019. Here we are showing the graph of the housing starts. The last number from September is 1.25 million houses a year. And this has been a steady story during the last years of some movements, but a small continued improvement in the housing starts in the U.S. Now moving to page 16 to some other markets, so especially Central and South America, which represent 30% of our sales of this division. In Brazil, the scenario remains a little bit difficult because of oil supply and some seasonality that affects the sales at the end of the year. In Chile, sales are being affected by the social protest that we experienced the last 4 weeks here in Chile. Some of our clients suffered the effects of the riots, and some of their stores were destroyed. So we are postponing some sales. But we expect the sales will recover. Now the situation is a little bit more stable after the agreement of the government with the opposition for a new constitution. Anyway, the sales that we have in Chile is about 7.5% of our wood bulk sales. In Argentina, we expect sales to continue increasing, the same as price in local currency, but that translated to dollars is still low because of the exchange rate movements. In terms of Asia and Oceania, which is 11%, we saw some signs of an increase in demand in Asia because of a probable end of the trade war between the U.S. and China, but we haven't seen any big improvement yet in prices. But we think that markets have reached bottom. Again, in this market, we expect to have some low demand because of the Chinese New Year also for wood products. And then for very marginal markets in Europe and Middle East, which is 2%, we have experienced low economic growth in Europe, and we expect demand to be stable in the Middle East. Page 17, looking a little bit above of our free cash flow, which in this quarter was positive, $62 million compared with a negative $437 million. The main explanation here is an decrease in working capital of about $150 million that compensated the lower EBITDA. This decrease in working capital was explained by a decrease in inventories that we already talked about, which represents more or less half of that, and the other half is a decrease in accounts receivable that we were able to do during the quarter. Again, the rest of the $75 million. The other effect was that this quarter we didn't pay income tax as big as we paid the annual income tax of the second quarter was regarding the result of 2018, so $200 million compared to $50. And then we had a higher CapEx of $281 compared to $240, which is basically explained that the second quarter we have the positive cash flow of the sales of the shares of Puloxa that were about $100 million. So that reduced artificially, let's say, the CapEx of the second quarter. Also, not affecting this quarter was that in the second quarter we had to pay dividends. We paid $210 million in dividends corresponding to the results of 2018. And this year we have this quarter we were not paying dividends. So that at the end produced a positive free cash flow that reduced our net debt to $200 million. The other effects that are moving the net debt down are the exchange rate variation, $90 million, and other effects of $60 million. Okay, then moving to page 18, an evolution of the net leverage that reached 3.3. So we are coming from a low of 1.9 in the end of 18, moving up as our last 12-month EBITDA is reducing because of the lower quarter results that we're getting as prices go down. In terms of cash and cash equivalent, it decreased $100 million from $1.25 billion to $1.5 million. 15 million $1 billion, sorry. Total debt was reduced by $300 million, basically because of the amortization, final amortization of the July 2019 bonds of about $170 million. And our last 12-month EBITDA was $1.27 billion. That is $18 million, 18% lower than the last quarter, last 12-month EBITDA. Okay, so moving to page 19, we have our debt amortization schedule as of September 19, and our main obligations for the rest of the year is $190 million, which is bank obligations of $113 million, basically the amortization that our subsidiary Montes del Plata has to do every quarter of their structured debt for the project, basically, and other debts that they are rolling over for forestry, and some small amounts in leasing in Chile and some small amounts in North America. And in terms of bonds, we only have to pay interest payments, $41 million, and some amortization local bonds of $22 million. The rest of the numbers are not reflecting the buyback of the bonds that we did in October, so we're still showing $308 million for 2021 and $440 million for 2022. So now moving into material facts and news, page 21. The dissolving pulp project, as of October 2019, we had almost completed the project, 98%. So as I mentioned, we just started again the mill yesterday. And we expect to start producing dissolving pulp probably the first month of 2020. Probably January we'll start producing and making the first test and ramping up dissolving pulp. So we expect to continue producing paper-grade pulp until the end of the year. Of course, the mill will keep the flexibility to switch from paper-grade to dissolving pulp if necessary. Page 22, an update of the MAPA project. As of September, we had a 22% accumulated advance according to schedule without any problems in terms of schedule. During the third quarter, we started the civil and electromechanical works, and we awarded the contracts for construction, administrative buildings, and other things. We keep the expectation of starting the line 3 in the second quarter of 2021, and that time line 1 will be shut down. So the slide 23, the last slide, just to mention that we did the first issuance of a sustainable bond by the company in at the end of October. We issued $1 billion of two bonds, one 4.2 note due 10 years due 2030, and $500 million of a note due 2050. We broke the record of the lowest coupon for a 30-year bond for Rauco, and also we became the first forestry company in Latin America to issue sustainable bonds, which are basically green bonds and social projects. Additionally, we did a tender offer for the notes due 2021 and 22, and we tendered amount about $43 million for the 2021 bond and $130 million for the $2022 million. The uses for the green and social bonds are listed there, but basically are that we have to spend an amount equal to the net proceeds in projects that are characterized in those segments: sustainable land use and forest management, sustainable water management, pollution prevention control, and renewable energy and other stuff. In terms of social, we are going to spend in affordable housing, access to social services, and socioeconomic advancement and empowerment. The other thing to comment is that we plan to do the make-whole for the rest of the bonds of 2021 that we were not tendered in the tender offer that we did in October. That should happen probably in the next 30 days or so. So that is what I had in my presentation. So I would like to open now for Q&A. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this point, we will open the floor for questions. If you have a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone telephones. If at any point your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the question queue by pressing star and two. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. We do ask that when you pose your question that you please pick up your handset to provide optimum sound quality. Once again, that is star and then one to ask a question. We will pause momentarily to assemble the roster. Our first question today comes from George Staphos from Bank of America. Please go ahead with your question.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Hi, Gianfranco. Thank you for the details. A couple of questions on pulp. Could you comment at all in terms of your outlook, what you're seeing right now as well in the dissolving pulp markets? They've been challenged very similarly to what we're seeing in the commodity markets. What gives you hope that perhaps these markets will improve as we look out to 2020? Relatedly to Valdivia, you said you're going to be making, obviously, paper-grade pulp through the end of the year. That's not a surprise, and you start making dissolving next year. What kind of lead time, what kind of obstacles, barriers, call it what you will, would exist between switching from dissolving back to paper grade, back to dissolving? How quickly could you do something like that over the course of a year? And I had a couple of follow-ons.
Okay, thanks for your question. Yes, of course, the prices for dissolving pulp are not in the numbers that we saw probably a year or two ago, that we had about $900 per ton, and now it's about $650, $630, which is a move. It moves also with the paper grade pulp price. There's about 25% swing capacity that moves from dissolving to paper grade and back. Of course, we have a lower break even than other companies because, as you know, we don't lose production as we move from paper grade to dissolving. That allow us to make money also with these current prices. So most probably we will try to produce more dissolving pulp than paper grade, but we have to start producing this new product, test it with clients, and that takes some time. So we need to go through this process of producing this new product. In terms of barriers to switch, it's not that hard. I mean, you can do it very quickly. I mean, probably during 1 or 2 days. You will have a mix of pulp in the process that you probably will have to sell at a lower price because it's a mixture of paper grade and dissolving once you are moving from one to the other. But that could be handled. Another the thing that I'm positive about dissolving pulp is that currently the United States has imposed a tariff of the imports of cloth from China of about 25%, and that is putting pressure on most of the viscose that is produced in China, and then that ends up in clothes going to the U.S. And as the trade war could be resolved quickly, that tariff will go down, and that will improve the prospects for the producers of viscose, and that will, of course, I would guess, put a better perspective on the price of dissolving. But anyway, with the current price of $640, $650, it's still better than selling paper grade at $460.
Thank you, Gianfranco. My other question, and I'll turn it over and go back in queue. And there's been a lot of discussion, obviously, on this in the last month during reporting season. We've seen producer inventories decline in terms of the PPPC data, and that's good. We never really know, ultimately, from where we sit, how customer inventories are. From your vantage point, have customers been stocking up more than normal, given where prices are right now, hopefully lower than normal as well, which might be an obstacle the producers need to manage against in 2020. And relatedly, your price realizations were actually a little bit better than we were modeling. That's neither here nor there, but were prices better than you thought? And how much of that might have been timing, which may adjust as we get into the fourth quarter? Thank you.
Yes, I agree with you that it's more difficult to get a sense of the client's inventory. There's no official statistics on that. Or anecdotal evidence is that we are seeing that some of our clients are increasing a little bit the inventory, and some of the bonded inventory that is in the ports now is in the ownership of more on the clients. It's moving a little bit on the clients. And that, of course, will help to put more pressure on price increases probably in the beginning of next year. But we don't have a statistic on that. It's a feeling of our commercial people that they're seeing that as margins, especially for Chinese customers, are getting better, the demand is getting better, and they see that we are probably in the bottom of the cycle. There's a lower probability of going below that point, that they are going to be buying more. But I don't have an official statistic on that. It's very hard to get. And regarding the realized prices, probably it's a question of timing. And that price that we are showing is an average of prices in many clients, many markets, and it depends on the clients that every company has, the average prices. So what we are showing there is the price that we are getting business in China, but at the end of the day, the average of all clients, it could be a little bit higher.
But if there were no changes in market pricing from here, your price would likely set lower in fourth quarter because of timing. Would that be fair?
In hardwood, could be, yes.
Okay.
But very small, I guess. Especially Europe was still going down, so probably on average that we sell some of our hardwood in Europe will get an effect on that. Probably prices in China are more stable, but Europe continued to go down through the cycle a little bit.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Leopoldo Silva from Lorraine Vale. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello, good morning, everyone. Good morning, Gianfranco. I have two questions. So my first question is regarding leverage. I would like to ask you what's your forecast on the top leverage that you will reach possibly next year? And related to this, do you have any threshold to not to give any dividend? And now that you have in a material fact announced that you had reached the possibility not to give it any dividend at all, and correct me if I'm wrong over there. Or maybe asked in another way, are you do you have in your forecast maybe reaching the 4.5 or maybe up to 6.5 times net debt EBITDA? And my second question is regarding CapEx, which is connected to the first one. At the beginning of the year, the company was forecasting around 2 billion of investment for 2019. Three quarters now, you have invested around 900 million. Possibly you won't reach the 2 billion. And I would like to ask you if for next year, possibly the investments that you didn't do this year will bulk up the investment for the next, or will you be able in this scenario of leverage to kick it forward to 2021? What should we expect as a CapEx for the next year? Those are my two questions.
Okay, well, regarding leverage and forecast, it's very difficult to forecast the peak right now because of we don't have a clear view of the prices for 2020. We are starting to prepare, finalizing our budget, but right now it's very hard to predict the prices for 2020. So I don't have a really a guess on that. We will try to keep it in a place where it's consistent with our investment grade, and that's what we're going to put our efforts. And probably this year we will pick get to a little bit over four times at the end of this year. But 2020 is still difficult to measure at this point. Regarding dividends, we approved on the end of October in the extraordinary shareholders meeting a modification to the bylaws of the company that now allows the ordinary shareholders meeting to determine the annual dividends that could be below the 30% that is now currently the legal limit for open companies in Chile. So our intention is to not to distribute dividends for the coming 2 years. Okay, that is a way that we are going to be keeping our cash for the project. So we will start we're not going to distribute the provisory dividends this year that we usually do in December, and we will not distribute dividends during 2020 and also 2021. That is our intention in order to preserve cash, and that's what we did that modification to the bylaws. That has to be also approved by the shareholders meeting next year, but since we are 100% owned by Empresas Copec, that is currently very, very easy. In terms of CapEx prospects, we are spending less than initially expected this year, basically because we did an effort to prioritize the investments that were not strategic in order to preserve our cash. And also the normal effect that you have every year that you budget to do everything and you end up doing less because of timing and things like that. So I would say that our capex for next year will be more close to $1.4 billion in total. That is currently represented by MAPA investments of about $700 million, and the rest is business as usual, $600 million and about $100 million of dissolving pulp. That is more or less the capital for this year. Next year, of course, we will have more of MAPA, probably a little bit over a billion that compensated for the investment that were moved rollover 2020. And then we will have another tail of investments in 21 and a little bit of in 22 of MAPA. And of course, 2020, 21, 22, we don't have this other impact, so we will only have the normal $600 million business as usual. That is basically the plantations of the trees that we harvest, plus all the maintenance and small projects that we currently do in all of our more than 40 mills that we have around the world.
Okay, thanks very much, Gianfranco.
Thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one. To remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Again, that is star and then one to ask a question. And we do have an additional question from Miguel Garcia from Citi. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, good morning. Following the recent liability management exercise, what's the feedback from the agencies regarding the peak in net leverage, and how are you guys thinking around the potential risks of downgrade in the next 12 to 18 months? Thank you.
Well, all of the rating agencies issued their reports all of the rating agencies issued their reports just before the issuance of the new bonds. So, and we held a conversation with them for many weeks, showing them our projections and talking about their strategy. And they agree with our strategy and the way that we see prices going forward. And they will probably be looking at the leverage in year 2021, at the end probably, once the project is ramping up, because they understand that currently we are spending in this project that will only bring the benefits of the new EBITDA probably at the end of 2021. So that is the most important part. At the exit of the project, where we land in the terms of our leverage, they understand that we're going to peak before that, and we will continue talking with them. But currently, they are very comfortable with their rating scenario and the way that we are managing our accounts.
And ladies and gentlemen, with that, we'll conclude today's question and answer section. At this time, I would like to turn the floor back over to Mr. Gianfranco Trifolo for any closing remarks.
Okay, thanks everyone for attending the call. We will have the next conference call probably somehow in the middle of March, where we will be presenting the fourth quarter results. So see you there. And in the meantime, any questions could be answered by your investor relations department here in Chile. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's conference call. We do thank you for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.